Acme Lithium, a company positioned near the epicenter of lithium production in the United States. Since 1966, Nevada's Clayton Valley has been the primary production source for lithium in all of North America. Acme Lithium holds two promising lithium projects in the Clayton Valley region. Acme Lithium, U.S. trading symbol ACLHF, and in Canada, ACME. Web address, acmelithium.com. That's acmelithium.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Joseph Umar, the executive director of Secure Free Society in Washington. This is the New World Report. And we turn to the election in Nicaragua, Central American state of Nicaragua, guided, dominated, bullied these many years by a man whom we know from the 20th century, Ortega, Daniel Ortega. The new player here is Daniel Ortega's wife, who is a power center on her own, Rosario Murillo. And this statement from the President of the United States in these last hours about the election held 24 hours ago in Nicaragua. Quote, what Nicaraguan President Daniel Ortega and his wife, Vice President Rosario Murillo, orchestrated today was a pantomime election that was neither free nor fair and most certainly not democratic. The arbitrary imprisonment of nearly 40 opposition figures since May, including seven potential presidential candidates, and the blocking of political parties from participation rigged the outcome well before Election Day. Joseph, it is good to hear from the White House. We have spoken with the spouse of one of the jailed men who could have run for president in these last months. Nicaragua is unacceptable anywhere in Europe as well as North America. It isolates Nicaragua. So first, I want to ask, is it practical, before we talk about the abuses, is it practical for Ortega and Murillo to turn themselves into what looks like the North Korea of Central America?
Well, John, here's the breaking news. Nicaragua's been that already for at least a half decade, probably even more. When Daniel Ortega came to power in 2007, for the second time, I should add, because he had held the presidency back in the late 80s and early 90s. But when he came to power more recently in this century, you know, people had that reservation about Daniel Ortega. You know, he was a known quantity. He was a revolutionary leader that had been part of the Sandinistas, the big struggle for communists in Central America. But, you know, like it is, like Washington tends to do, we wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt. We said, we're going to see how he's going to govern in the next few years, and hopefully he's not going to be as radical as what some people had would think. And what we saw in the first term of Daniel Ortega was he was aligned with all the bad actors in Latin America and in the world. However, he wasn't as autocratic as, say, Hugo Chavez in Venezuela or the Castros in Cuba. He didn't nationalize his entire industry. He wasn't persecuting, at least at a tremendous level, political opposition. But nonetheless, he was aligning with them. It was during his second term, John, which was from 2012 to 2016, where we started to see these autocratic tendencies. It's also where we started to see Rosario Murillo come into the picture, because at the end of his second term is when he named her the vice president. And in fact, he calls her his co-president, like, you know, a co-worker, co-president, because she actually has most of the power inside the country. So really, we're going back to about 2016, when we knew that this is already going down a very slippery slope to authoritarianism. And then in 2018, when the protests broke out, we saw the true nature of the Ortega Murillo regime, where they cracked down brutally on the protesters and civil society. I mean, they jailed and killed more protesters in Nicaragua in a shorter amount of time than in Venezuela in 2017, the year prior. And then we go to this year where pretty much he jails all his political opposition, all seven presidential candidates that had any kind of meaningful opposition to Daniel Ortega are in prison. So he won this election, if you want to call it that. It's a sham election. It's pretty much Daniel Ortega versus Daniel Ortega, and so obviously he's going to win. But now I think the world kind of understands that this is not a democracy, and this is now a crime family that's kind of morphing into a dictatorship.
Is it significant that we have this from London? Britain on Monday said President Daniel Ortega was dragging Nicaragua further down the, quote, tragic path of authoritarianism, end quote, with an election which was neither free nor fair because all credible opposition candidates had been jailed or disqualified. I read that. It's very close to what the White House said. However, the puzzle I have is Europe has been one of the endorsers of the Havana regime for decades, going along with much of the agitprop from Havana about what their troubles are and how the U.S. is the cause of it all. This suggests that at least one major player in Europe is not going to follow the same playbook about Managua. Is that significant, Joe?
I mean, it is, and it's good that I think we have a lot of members of the international community that are clear on Nicaragua than previous years. However, my concern is it may be too late. And this is the same problem we had with Venezuela. There's a period of time where also the most of the international community realized that Maduro is a dictator and he's a crime syndicate, and they reacted, recognizing another individual as the constitutional president, which would be Juan Guaido. The question is, are we at that point in Nicaragua? You know, here's an interesting fact, John. It seems about 14 years is about the time it takes for these new authoritarians to be able to consolidate their dictatorships in the country. It's 14 years when Hugo Chavez passed the baton over to Nicolas Maduro, and he obviously passed away from cancer. And since 2013 in Venezuela, we haven't seen any semblance of democracy in that country, probably before then. It was 14 years before Evo Morales was able to commit one of the biggest electoral frauds in the country's history, had to resign, but only to come back a year later, maybe not as president, but with a puppet Maz government in power. And it's been 14 years that Daniel Ortega has been in power now in Nicaragua, and he's moving on to his, I would say, unconstitutional, really, fourth term, even though he changed the constitution in 2009 to be able to do this. But this is going to be, I think, the era of Rosario Murillo. And so the question is, does the international community have the tools to be able to deal with this kind of new authoritarianism? I'm concerned that they won't. I think the major effect that the international community has to prepare for is immigration, because we know that Honduras, Salvador, Guatemala, those are the main countries where the migrants are spilling out of, moving into the border. I think we've already seen Nicaraguans coming in that migrant flow, but we're going to see more of it, because I think now you're going to see a much more authoritarian, at least openly authoritarian, Ortega Murillo regime in Nicaragua.
What I've learned from you, Joseph, over this last year and more, our conversations, including Senator Cabal from Colombia, is that this is not random one-off caudillos grabbing everything they can and living in the palace. There is a pattern here that suggests a larger plan, which is to sweep through Latin America, South America, and Central America, and convert regimes that had been democracies, however imperfect, into a uniform authoritarian populist left, persuaded to welcome Moscow, Tehran, Beijing, other bad actors into the region, not as a provocation of the U.S., but really as knitting together what you'd have to say as Axis powers. Now, the reason I bring this up, because you've taught me this, we have this statement from Costa Rica President Carlos Alvarado Quesada. He tweeted, after the results were underway in Nicaragua, his neighboring country, he tweeted that the Ortega and he said he won't recognize the election because the lack of democratic conditions and guarantees. Is Costa Rica now in threat because of Nicaragua? You mentioned Salvador. We know Honduras and Guatemala are troubled. Honduras is going to have an election. And we've talked about Mexico just momentarily with David Grantham. Is there a plan underway to convert all of these countries, including the resistance in Costa Rica or the resistance in Panama?
No, absolutely, John. I think you very eloquently kind of describe the strategic problem set that we're facing in Latin America. It's not one-off cases of authoritarianism in different countries that are popping up under different conditions and with different objectives. There are alliances that are essentially creating authoritarians that they can build a bigger alliance. And the main objective, John, isn't just to turn the governments against the United States, but to turn Latin Americans themselves against the United States. One of their biggest weapons is disinformation. The Ortega Murillo regime in Nicaragua has been one of the champions of disinformation in Central America. During that pandemic, they were the number one country that would essentially have the most false reporting about the infections and deaths in their country. They've spread all kinds of conspiracy theories about the vaccines and also about the U.S. involvement in the pandemic. And so this is essentially what we're seeing is we're seeing these authoritarian nations trying to turn the world upside down. They want to make black, white, white, black, day, night, night, day. And they want to convince everybody that they're the good guys and the United States is the bad guy. Now, it's more subtle and nuanced than that. But nonetheless, at the end of the day, the more these regimes take power in Latin America, the more we're going to have problems such as migration, such as drug trafficking, such as terrorism. And Latin America is going to look more and more like the Middle East. And I think that's the concern that we have, at least from the folks that I'm talking to here in the national security apparatus in Washington, D.C.
I believe I have it correct that the OAS is meeting this week. I believe it is a General Assembly in Guatemala. Is the OAS equipped with tools to mitigate or disrupt this overall swing to authoritarianism, or is it powerless?
I wouldn't say it's powerless, but it's also needs additional tools and additional backing. And we saw with the Venezuela crisis and that challenge that we posed pretty much throughout most of the presidency of Donald Trump, that the OAS was a major tool to delegitimize the Maduro regime. But unfortunately, it wasn't enough to essentially get the regime out of power and get the a free situation for the Venezuelan people. So I think we're facing almost unprecedented challenges in these type of regimes. They're not the typical dictatorships from the 20th century, the military dictatorships of the 60s, 70s, and 80s in Latin America. These are have dictatorial qualities. They're authoritarian, but they also have expansionist objectives. They want to conquer more territory throughout Latin America. I think it's something that we have to take very serious. And I think being the fact that it's so close to the United States, it's going to affect us one way or the other.
One other election pending that we will cover over these next weeks in Chile, a country that has been extremely successful and is now troubled. The major candidate is Kast on the right of center and Boric left of center. And I'm told once they go to the second round, because there will likely be no majority in the first round, it favors Boric. Boric, however, is presented to me as a first timer, a newbie, as a politician, a 35-year-old graduate student who reads classical Marxism from Europe from the 20th century. Is Boric vulnerable to the authoritarianism that we see in Central America?
Oh, absolutely, John. He's part of the same network. Boric, in fact, is one of the people when he was a student leader that caused a lot of the chaos and instability in Chile to be able to push them to be able, having to rewrite their constitution, which is what they're going through right now. Chile was one of the most stable countries in the region. It was one of the most economically prosperous countries in the region, but that didn't seem to be good enough because they still want to transform and radically change their constitution. So Boric, absolutely, if he does become the president of Chile, he's going to take Chile towards the radical left. He's going to align them with Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela, with Argentina, with Bolivia, with Nicaragua and the rest. But it's to be determined because Jose Antonio Kast, who's the right-wing candidate of the what they call the Republican Party of Chile, he's gaining steam. And he's gaining steam. He's going to be a very competitive election. I agree, John. I don't think we're going to find out the winner in the first round is going to go to ballotage. So in probably December, I believe it's December 19th when the second round goes. It's right before Christmas. We'll know who the new president of Chile is. And we'll see. I mean, there's 10 elections in Latin America this year. Five of them have already taken place. Five of them are taking place this month, at least the first rounds. And there's a balance between authoritarians and democracy. The way I have it tallied right now, I think authoritarians are up 3-2. But this depends on what happens in the elections this month, including in Chile.
Joseph Umar is the executive director of Secure Free Society in Washington. We're going to turn to the Colombia-Venezuela border, where Joseph spent time recently, thanks to the auspices of the Colombian military and Colombian government. Very dangerous time that Joseph spent on a river. And there's a new video that will momentarily be available for you to understand the profound challenge to our ally, Colombia. This is CBS Eye on the World, the New World Report. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.